Hey friends, how you doing tonight? Let's go. Yeah. Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. This is show number 110. Today is February the 25th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. The revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role. Okay, friends, welcome to the show. You're listening to CHLY at 101.7 FM, downtown Nanaimo. So what do we have for you, show number 110? Well, first off, let's thank Bruce Coburn, as usual, for his Actions Speak Louder intro there. Right now we're listening to DJ Shadow Bev. We'll be followed by Ashley McIsaac. Okay, today's show, I have an interview with Wayne Pageant. He has a home-based herbal medicine company, Northern Natural Health. He lives in, son of a gun, it's either Bella Bella or Bella Coola. On the coast, a couple hundred miles north of me right now. Now, his main concern is concerning the carbon credit trading scam, as he calls it. He's really upset that politicians are not coming clean on this. So, you know, that links us to a lot of things. That Kyoto Protocol, which calls for emissions trading. And all this is to get rid of the greenhouse gases, which are primarily, according to the Kyoto, the carbon dioxide, methane nitrous oxide, methane nitrous oxide, and sulfur hexafluoride. So those are the four evils that are polluting our atmosphere, and what many people are saying is leading to weather change. Some say it's getting warmer, some say it's getting colder. Pretty confusing topic as far as I'm concerned. So that will be shortly, in about maybe 15 minutes. So Wayne Pageant. Also, I have an audio piece, and I played it last week, and I'm going to do something I've only done once before. I'm going to play something two shows in a row. I do my best not to double up on things, because I archive this show, and it doesn't seem fair for people to download stuff that they've already heard. But this one is really, really important. It's a piece on how television works. And I'm a big fan of kicking your TV right in the chest and doing away with it. I believe that you are hypnotized by it and a lot of negative things. I don't know too many good things that come out of it. You know, I mean, it has its entertainment value, but so does going for a walk in the wilderness, doesn't it? So we're going to hear a corporate media survival guide, and they present how television works. Like I say, I played that last week, but by accident I introduced an old commercial for Camel cigarettes, saying how more doctors prefer Camel cigarettes. I introduced that when really this how television works came on, so I missed out my chance to let you know what an important piece this is. Okay, carrying on. I'm going to be reading a letter tonight. It comes to us from lawyersagainstthewar.org, and that also spells law, lawyers against the war. And what's going on is George W. Bush, the former president of the U.S., is reportedly to be coming to Calgary, Alberta. I never thought that he'd go on speaking tours, but I don't know if he's going to be speaking at this event, but March 17th in Calgary. Okay, to speak to at a private function. So surprise, surprise. I'm sure it'll be well scripted. We're not going to let him speak off the cuff, are we? So, but there's a big problem here because evidence of Bush's involvement in torture and other war crimes, as well as crimes against humanity, has triggered Canada's legal duty to bar Bush from entering Canada, and if he enters, to prosecute him for torture. Now, this comes to us from Gail Davidson of Lawyers Against the War, who are a Canadian-based international committee that opposes war and advocates the adherence of international humanitarian laws and against impunity for violators. So this is a pretty important piece. You know, let's keep in mind, these are war criminals that are taking part in this bogus war of terror. And this lawyer, what did I say the name was again? Gail, her name is Gail Davidson. Out of Vancouver is Gail, so I'm going to... She gives a lot of backstory into the specific laws that are being violated and why Canada should bar Bush from coming in. Better yet, let him in and put that guy in jail. How about that? Okay, another piece, an audio piece. This is a longer one. And I was recently in Victoria, B.C., and was interviewed for a public access television show called Face to Face with Jack Etkin. The director and producer is Steve Poole, also of Victoria. And we discussed for nearly an hour a lot of topics. I guess they were sort of centered in becoming the media, but we also branched into, looking at, you know, fascism or corporatism, heroes, the SPP, as well as suggested reading, so says I. Two sets of books. Those that, I guess kind of the Naomi Klein, you know, the TV pundit version of reality. And, you know, while they do fantastic research, for the most part, they stay within the official story of officialdom. And then the second set of books branches off into, they are willing to step into that rabbit hole and see where it leads them. So I've been a fan of that project since its beginning. You know, becoming the media to me is so, so important for us right now at this rather frightening time in history where I do not believe that you can trust corporate media, which means, you know, your television, your newspaper, and, well, an awful high percentage of the websites out there on the Internet. We really have to work to protect the Internet. That is so, so important. I'm not saying that we're not clever and can't come up with something else if they try to privatize that, which they're working really hard on, but son of a gun, I don't want that to happen. So getting back to this face-to-face with Jack Etkin, episode number 9 is now posted, and they are at Google Video. So, you know, go into your Google browser and... there's a video option up top, and you can punch in face-to-face with Jack Etkin. And so episode 9 features Bruce Halser, and the show before mine, Sense of Justice, with Ray and Kalen, were talking about this same topic. So I'm glad that there's lots of information on this getting out. So what Bruce Halser, first off, he is a Victoria lawyer and member of British Columbians for British Columbia STV, the Single Transferable Vote. And they talk about the benefits and advantages of the Single Transferable Vote and how it may finally lead us back towards real democracy. So that's episode 9 of Face to Face with Jack Etkin. And the audio piece that we're going to be playing which features myself and Jack Edkin in discussion, is episode number 8. So if you want to see my funny smiling face on the cover of Become the Media Weekly, you'll get this. You can check me out. It's my first time on video on the internet, and boy, I was cringing watching for about the first 5 or 10 minutes. I was covering my eyes like you might in a horror movie, but you know, really you're looking because you don't want to miss it. But it was something to see yourself on TV. But I'm fairly happy with the discussion, and I don't wish to take back anything I said, so that's always a positive thing. So I'm going to play that interview with you. It is 51 minutes. And again, you can watch it on the internet as well. So, let's see. I think I've mentioned everything that we're going to do tonight. Well, for the most part, there's a couple things I'll leave out. So that means we are going to jump right in to the weather forecast. Do I have that correct? Is it... Yeah, that's right. We're going to do the weather right now. And boy, is it weathery out there. A lot of snow coming down. A lot of snow. So, let's see. Is this weather update being brought to us by anyone special? No, it is just by the... Well, these are special people. They're the financial contributors to CHLY and to this show in particular that have paid the big bucks, the business thing. So, this is their hit. And they are... Victoria 911 Truth, Edmonton 911 Truth, and Fraser Valley 911 Truth. Three fantastic groups of truth-telling people who are doing their best to do their best. And that's all you can do, right? So, I think that's going to do it for our weather. So, I am going to play that audio piece on how television works. I want you to pay close attention to this because... it is so important to me and all of us, I believe. And that's going to be followed with the interview with Wayne Pageant. And again, he's either in Bella Bella or Bella Coola. We'll find out in a couple minutes. So let's get on this audio piece on how television works. And that will be followed by the interview with Wayne. So stay tuned. And, of course, you're listening to Unbought and Unbossed on CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. We're also on the internet at www.chly.ca. You can listen live streaming. So that's an option for you. Here we go. How television works, followed by an interview.
Percent of the commercial network television time is paid for by the 100 largest corporations in North America. Some corporations have television budgets that range into the billions per year. Television producers compromise and end up mitigating their desires for those of the advertisers. Thus, television is effectively a private medium for their use only. A person watches television, the more easily the brain slips into alpha level, a slow, steady brainwave pattern in which the mind is in its most receptive mode. Images and suggestions are implanted directly into the mind without viewer participation. An effective hypnosis is induced, and the viewer surrenders to the unending television image stream. Images of television violence stimulate the fight-or-flight instinct. But since it would be absurd to react to television violence, the viewer suppresses the emotion. Viewers are drawn back and forth on cycles of impulse and suppression. When the set goes off, this stored-up energy bursts forth in frantic behavior commonly associated with childhood hyperactivity. Television imagery is jammed together in a steady stream of information, fracturing your attention while condensing and accelerating time. These events would not happen in ordinary life. They are technical alterations only possible within the moving image media. Living in the rapid world of television imagery, ordinary life is dull by comparison, and often far too slow. People who are immersed in the surrogate reality of television life deal on a daily basis with a reality totally unlike any that has preceded it. The image stream is a steady, mixed-up stream of real, unreal, and semi-real events. All of these events end up merging with each other and becoming just another set of stored imagery that have all similar reality values.
Okay, very nice. That was How Television Works. So says a corporate media survival guide. Okay, well, as promised, I have Wayne Pageant on the phone with me. Wayne, are you in Bella Bella or Bella Coola? I can't remember.
Bella Coola.
Bella Coola, very nice. So you're quite a bit north of me, but you're on the coast as well, are you not?
300 miles north of Vancouver on the central coast, yeah.
There we go. Okay. So welcome to the show. I introduce you that you have a home-based herbal medicine company, Northern Natural Health. But your topic that you seem most interested in right now is the carbon credit trading, which you call a scam. So would you like to, I don't know if you want to further introduce yourself a little bit or jump right into the topic that you're most interested in?
Okay, well, I'll try to tie the two together.
Okay.
The reason why I received this information from the Conference Board of Canada is because of our company being a green company, as it were.
Okay, and what do you mean by that? What makes you green?
Well, being a company that is using wildcrafted botanicals for the products that we make with Northern Natural Health Products Limited, and so I received this invitation from the Conference Board of Canada to attend a conference concerning Western Carbon Emissions Business Forum, and this was in October of 2007.
Okay.
And the meeting was held at the Hyatt Regency Vancouver. And so when I started looking at this, and I called the conference board because they said they had sponsorships. And so I called them and said, well, how much would it cost me to go to this conference? And they said, oh, $7,000. And I said, well, that's a little bit steep. What about a sponsorship? And they said, no. So that's as far as that went. But
so they initially said that there was funds to help you get there, and then you looked into it, and it turns out there wasn't?
I didn't see any funds or hear about them.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, I perused this advertisement for this forum, and I found it pretty interesting because it was sponsored by TransCanada, which I'm not sure. I guess that's a hydroelectric company. And then there's the Forest Products Association of Canada. And the one that grabbed my attention the most was a group called IETA. And that is the International Emissions Trading Association. And I found this rather strange, and I thought, what is this? And so I started reading what the conference was about, and then it was asking questions like, how will Canada's carbon emissions and greenhouse gas management strategies impact your organization? And I thought, well, not too much, I don't think. But anyway, then the part that really got to me was, it says, how will America's carbon markets evolve, and what can we learn from other carbon markets? Then there's a statement here. In June 2006, the Asian Development Bank projected that the global carbon emissions market will become a $100 billion U.S. business in the years ahead. The projection is based on recent scientific findings on climate change and the impact of the Kyoto Protocol and the EU emissions trading scheme. So I read further, and it said that industrial groups in the European Union and Japan and elsewhere require carbon credits to avoid penalties for their greenhouse gas emission levels. In other words, to continue, these groups can buy carbon offsets or like credits from developing countries that reduce emissions by more than the necessary amount.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, what this environmental market, like a stock market, is allowing countries or companies to go in and start businesses in undeveloped countries and get an excess of carbon credits to offset their carbon taxes in North American markets,
So it makes it very favorable for multinationals that have the money to, the incentive is there, you know, because so many of these countries are willing to, you know, sell away their water rights and energy rights and, to entice, big business to come visit. But it seems to be a bit of a nightmare for, well, a number of reasons, and it sounds like we're talking about one of them.
Well, yes, we are. And then it continues on here. It gets a little bit more clear as to what's going on here in Canada and the U.S. It says that the Montreal Climate Exchange, in partnership with the Chicago Climate Exchange, has been established as the first environmental products market in Canada. This new exchange will offer a suite of environmental financial products and services to the Canadian market.
Mm-hmm.
And so I call this the stock market in the sky, more. What they teach people at these conferences is that how you can basically skirt around the Kyoto Affair. And not be so heavily, your business and industry won't be so heavily taxed.
Well, Kyoto is also, you know, built into it is this emissions trading. That is part of the Kyoto Protocol.
I see. Now, that I wasn't aware of before.
Yeah, that's part of their solution. So,
yes,
yeah. I have a real hard time. Why don't we just lower the emissions instead of trading them? You know, I mean, are we really solving the problem here? I don't think so.
I don't think we are. We're skirting around the issue,
yeah.
And we're just playing a roll the dice more or less, mm-hmm. and see how you do here.
Well,
this afternoon I got on the computer and looked up the IETA, the International Emissions Trading Association, and you can anyone can go online and find them. I found them very easily. It would be www.ieta.org. And it gives you all the background information on this world-class, it's a worldwide scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I found out that they now have offices in Geneva, Switzerland.
Okay, yeah.
They have offices in Brussels, Belgium.
Yeah.
They and then Washington, D.C.
So a lot of the banking and power houses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, for anyone's information that's interested, there's one on Spark Street in Ottawa.
Okay.
And the telephone number for them is 1-613-594-3912. And that's close to home, and you can get information directly from them if you wish.
Right.
And then further, this this group, the IETA, is the legal structure of it, I found, is that the International Emissions Trading Association has emerged from the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development Policy Forums on Greenhouse Gas Emissions Trading in 1999. It was started through the corporation of that group and the World Business Council for Sustainable Development.
Okay.
Then it moves on to the IETA received legal nonprofit status from the government of Switzerland in June of 2000 and received United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change non-governmental organization accreditation in October 2000. So this is a non-profit making organization that will make billions.
You know, Al Gore, the prince of environmentalism, is involved. I guess he's the CEO. He's got his own company going that's going to stand to make an awful lot of money in this carbon trading scam.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, so, I didn't know that. I had heard that he pays about $32,000 for his hydro a year on his big home in Tennessee.
Okay.
But anyway, as we carry on here. Now, they also say again that they currently have offices in Geneva, Switzerland, and Brussels, Belgium, and Ottawa, Ontario, and Washington, D.C. And then they list some of the principles of this organization that are quite interesting. The vice chairman is a man named David Hone. And he's what they call the group climate change advisor, and he's with Shell.
Yes, okay.
That ties in pretty good.
Oh, I think so.
All right, and then we go on down, and we come to others here. We have also, let me see, there was another one here, too, that caught my eye. Would be Chevron is also involved here.
Okay.
Let's see. I can't find it right now, but one of the members is with Chevron. So the oil companies seem to be worldwide very well connected there.
They're also in this Kyoto. There's a grandfather clause, so to speak, that because we're using such dirty technologies, coal and oil. Various fossil fuels, that this grandfather clause will come in and say, well, we were doing it wrong in the past, so we're gonna allow you to keep doing it wrong now, but you guys better start getting better. It just seems like a big sham.
Well, it is, and I don't know, I lost track of what's happening with carbon taxes in B.C. or in Canada. Do you know any more about that?
I do not know a whole lot about that, but what I do know is that that brokerage house you're talking about in Chicago with the trading, that is voluntary. You don't need to, if you're a big corporation that, spews emissions through your processes, it's voluntary, where in London there's another stock house dealing in the same thing, but it's mandatory there. I guess all big industry needs to join in. It's not, you don't have a choice.
Oh, I see.
So there's, I guess, two different systems.
I see. Okay, well, I looked at the membership of this organization, and it says that in February, this year, the EE, or the IETA, the International Emissions Trading Association, comprises 173 international companies, you can get the details on those members from the email site here or the website here,
mm-hmm.
and just a little bit more of a background, when they began in 2003, the IETA entered into agreements with the Development Bank of Japan and the Japan Bank for International Cooperation. In 2004, they joined with California Climate Action Registry, announced their affiliation. That would be with Schwarzenegger, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, the IETA entered into agreements with the UK Emissions Trading Group Limited, the World Bank, and the Brazilian Council for Sustainable Development in 2004. Since early 2005, the Federation of Chilean Industry is considered a partner with IETA.
Okay.
So now it would seem that the pattern of development would be that they've taken on Chile and Brazil to be able to do some corporation building there, so that they can get the low carbon, they can get the high carbon credits there,
yeah,
to trade in the world market,
yeah,
more.
That's right.
Right. So, so basically, that's the setup. That's the scheme. So, it looks as though if the government here or any other country is going to charge its citizens carbon credits, I have a suspicion that it will be the public citizens that are paying for helping the corporations out.
Yeah, it seems to be. Well, Premier Campbell, added on a 2 cents a liter carbon tax.
Yes, that's what I thought was already in place.
To pretend that, we're going to drive less because, the price went up 2 cents. I mean, that's pretty silly thinking.
Yeah, so it looks I had a feeling that that was the beginning of us paying for the big corporations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
this is another dreadful story that these international bigwigs, these moneyed interests, have yet found another way to keep the money flowing in their direction.
That's right. Well, I didn't realize that this company had grown so large. This group had grown so large, but it's worldwide, it's international, and it's tied in with the EU. It's quite mind-boggling. I wish I could have gone to the conference and talked to people more about this, but I really couldn't afford it. But it was for the big corporations and for Western Canada.
We are getting close to end time, so
okay.
If you want to, wrap up your last point and then, maybe add another quick one.
Okay. Well, basically, I just wanted people to know this, and they can find all this information that I have right here on the email. It's just www.ieta.org, and it gives you every detail,
okay,
of what's going on with this idea.
Very good. Well, I'll pass that on my website, so visitors can check that out.
Yeah, and one last issue of something that really, really bothers me with taxes and that.
Okay, we'll have to make this quick, but carry on.
Okay, is that I would like to know how many people voted on the Winter Olympics that will be happening here. And because I've talked to a lot of people all over BC that didn't vote on this,
mm-hmm,
and they said that most of the old-timers that I've talked to said that our children's children won't even pay for it.
Wow. Yeah, the price is just skyrocketing.
It's so
frightening.
And so it looks like it's a case of, I see it as what America fought a revolution over, and it's taxation without,
mm-hmm,
representation.
There you go.
And so that's how I see that one,
yeah,
as far as taxes go. And I don't know where they're going to get all these taxes when no one's working. So,
yeah.
So that could be a good trick if they can do it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. I would like to thank you, Wayne Pageant, for coming on the show and sharing some of that.
Okay, I certainly enjoyed it.
Okay, well, thank you, and be well. We'll talk again in the future.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, partner.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Okay, very nice. That was Wayne Pageant speaking to us from, did he see Bella Coola, I think he said. So there we are on the, what did he say, 300 miles north of Vancouver. So there we are. I wonder if he's getting snow, because it is still really coming down that that white stuff out there. Okay, we're going to move on now to an audio track by Gil Scott-Heron. And the track is called B-Movie. And Gil Scott-Heron is a truth-telling poet slash singer. And this was recorded in 1982. And it's talking about, politics, so what else? But Ronald Reagan, in particular. Gil Scott-Heron, you might know him for the song This Revolution Will Not Be Televised. I've played that track in the past on this show. So we're going to get to that. And when I come back, I'm going to read a letter from Lawyers Against the War, because George Bush is coming to read. I'm not going to say he's coming to speak. He's coming to read in Calgary. Where else? Okay, so Gil Scott-Heron, B-Movie. You're listening to CHLY and the Unbought and Unbossed show. Talk to you soon.
Then we decided that we were going to call this particular idea from Shogun to Ray Gun. Covered everything that we wanted to talk about. Because, see, the news was loose about the mandate. A mandate would be indicating a majority, an overwhelming majority, as a matter of fact, a landslide. A majority of such force that it entitled the holder of this mandate to change everybody's life 180 degrees. So we went down in the community down on 7th Street, told some of the brothers there had been a mandate for Ray Gun. And he said, oh yeah? What was the final score? So they said, well, 26% of the registered voters voted for Ray Gun. They said they would have been more impressed if it had been 26% of the American people. And they would say, well, Skippy come in second with 21% of the registered voters. And that among all the other people who was running also at the same time, they gathered about 2% altogether. First thing that the brothers noticed was that 51% of the registered voters had voted for nobody. And as far as they were concerned, that indicated that nobody should be the president. That 74% of the registered voters had not voted for Reagan, which indicated a mandate in the other direction. And after a few months of dealing with Reagan and his administration, they have come back to me and said, yeah, it's true. Nobody is the president. See, a lot of folks believe that this was the first time we had ever done anything on Reagan. That's not true. We had done several things. We did a poem one time called the Bicentennial Blues. And we referred to Reagan as Hollyweird. Acted like an actor. Acted like a Democrat. Acted like a liberal. When he was acting like the head of the Screen Actors Guild, this is a position currently held down by a man named Ed Asner. During the late 40s, Ronald Reagan was the head of the Screen Actors Guild, and it was his job to defend people like Dalton Trumbull or David Susskind from the rages of McCarthyism. That was when they were looking for reds under the corners of every carpet. Decided he was going to act like a Republican. Acted like General Franco when he acted like governor of California. Heard the conservatives was on the way in and acted like one of them. Showed up in 1976 acting like somebody was going to vote for him for president. And showed up in 1980 acting like 26% of the registered voters was actually a mandate. Got all of us acting in this one, actually. The truth is that at least 26% of the registered voters don't want to deal with tomorrow. They are holding on to some image of America's past. But America has changed in the last 20 years from a producer to a consumer. And all consumers know that when the producer names the tune, the consumer has got to dance. That's the way it is. You don't believe it? You go downtown tomorrow, pick up a $4 piece of meat, give the man $2, and we'll see you in about 30 days. Because whatever's happening, the producer names the tune, and the consumer has got to dance. See, it was all right when America was the producer. Hey, they was dealing with it. It was my way or the highway. But now that America is a consumer, they want everybody to deal with the same thing they deal with. They don't know if they want to be Bob Dylan or Matt Dylan. They don't know if they want to be diplomats or continue to threaten everyone with a nuclear nightmare. John Foster Dulles ain't nothing but the name of an airport now. See, this used to be a country where everybody looked forward to tomorrow. And all of a sudden it became the way we were in the summer of 42. And them good old days, them good old boys, them good old days, them good old boys. And all it proved is that America was not ready to deal with today. They were looking for one of their cinema heroes from the 30s or the 40s to run up and save everything at the last minute. Because somebody always came to save America at the last minute. Bottom of the ninth, two outs, two stacks, nobody on base, down by 10, don't worry. Somebody will come to save America. Especially in the movies. You see, when I used to go to a movie as a young man, there was always two of them. There was the one that you was paying your money to see, and then there was the second one, which was like a B-movie. This was the one that Reagan was usually in. And it would either be like an opener or one of them tremendously patriotic flicks or something with the monkey. And the monkey was all right. The monkey was cool. But what happened is that America looked back for someone from the 30s or 40s. They were actually looking for someone like John Wayne. But John Wayne was no longer available, and so they had to settle for Ronald Reagan. And it has given us all the feeling that we are somehow being cast as supporting or non-supporting characters in a B-movie. Calling us back to those inglorious days before heroes were zeros, before fair was square, when the cavalry came straight away and all American men were like Hemingway, to the days of the wondrous B-movie. The producer, underwritten by all the millionaires necessary, will be Casper, the defensive Weinberger. No more animated a choice available. The director will be Attila the Hague, frantically running around declaring himself in charge and in control, the ultimate realization of the inmates taking over at the asylum. The screenplay will be from a book called Voodoo Economics by George Papadopoulos. A special introduction by David, the Trojan Horse, Stockman. The theme song is very military, macho, macho man.
Macho, macho man. You left.
A little blues music for saber rattling and stomach war door to door. Remember, we're looking for the closest thing we could get to John Wayne. We're looking around feeling as though it went from Hollywood to hillbillies, from liberal to liberalist, from Bonzo to Birch Idol, born again. Civil rights, women's rights, gay rights, it's all wrong. Call in the cavalry. Disrupt this perception of freedom gone wild. God damn it, first one of them wanted freedom, and then they all want freedom. Give them an inch, and they'll take a mile. Nostalgia, that's what America wants, the good old days. When we gave them hell. When the bus stopped somewhere and you could still buy something with it. To a time when movies were in black and white. And so was everything else. Lon Chaney, our man of a thousand faces, got nothing on Ron. Doug Henning will do the makeup. Special effects by Crazy Glue and Grecian Formula 16. Transportation furnished by the David Rockefeller Remote Control Corporation. Their slogan is, why wait till 1984? You can panic now and avoid the rush. So much for the good news. As Wall Street goes, so goes the nation. And here's a look at the closing stocks. Racism is up, human rights are down. Peace is shaky, war items are hot, the house claims all ties. Jobs are scarce, money is hard to come by, and common sense is at an all-time low with heavy trading. Movies were looking better than ever, all of a sudden no one is looking because we all feel as though we're starring in a B-movie. And we would have rather had John Wayne. Damn well probably would have done better if we'd have ended up with John Wayne. Love me, y'all. You don't have to be ignorant. You don't ever really have to worry. You don't have to think about how you feel. Just keep repeating that none of this is real. And if you're thinking that something's wrong, well, just remember that it won't be too long.
That is going to take care of that. How are we doing on time? It's going okay. I'm going to move on now to Lawyers Against the War. This is a letter here which has been sent to many persons in the government, and it is making its rounds on the emails right now. This is concerning this letter, which is to the Prime Minister and Ministers Nicholson, Van Loan, Kenny, and Cannon, who stand for the Minister of Justice, Minister of Public Safety, Minister of Immigration, and Minister of Foreign Affairs. So it is legal duties triggered by news of visit that we must bar George W. Bush from entering Canada or prosecute him for torture. So George W. Bush, the former President of the U.S., and Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, is reported to be coming to Calgary March 17th, 2009. And again, I say that he's here to read, not to speak. And that's not a joke. I'm sure that's true. So let me tell you quickly a little bit about Lawyers Against the War. They are a Canadian-based international group of lawyers who support the use of national and international law to settle disputes, to prosecute offenders, and to protect human rights, as well as to oppose the illegal use of force between states, in particular, the illegal U.S.-led use of force against Afghanistan and Iraq, this whole war of terror, as well to support the rule of law and adherence to international law. Law is affiliated with a couple other lawyer groups, one in the U.K., one in the Netherlands, one in Sweden. So law calls for, firstly, an immediate end to the bombing and other illegal use of force in Iraq and Afghanistan. Secondly, that the United Nations, the UN Security Council, the UN General Assembly, and the Secretary General of the UN to discharge their legal duties and institutional responsibilities to maintain international peace and security, and to ensure that member states' reactions conform in all respects to national law and principles of justice. Also, that national governments and the responsible organs of the UN to ensure that the rights of combat and non-combatants, that fair trials are held, and also that there is no impunity for human rights offenders, which is what George W. Bush and the rest of that Bush administration and, the Canada one as well, going along with, this war of terror with zero evidence to suggest that 9/11, was the start of this. You look into that and you're very quickly going to find out that big problems in that story. So let's carry on here. Let me take a quick look at my schedule. We're doing okay. So moving into this letter here. I want to thank Peter Zaza, an author in Victoria, for forwarding me this piece. So, George W. Bush is a person credibly accused of torture and other gross human rights violations, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. This fact triggers two branches of Canadian law. First, the Minister of Immigration is legally bound to prevent Bush's entry into Canada at any time and for any reason. Secondly, if Bush does enter Canada, the Attorney General of Canada must prosecute him for torture or provide consent to private prosecution. So with this document, law, which again is Lawyers against the war, formally requests that the Canadian government of Canada immediately take the necessary steps, as required by law, to firstly ensure that George W. Bush is denied entry into Canada in accordance with the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, and secondly, to designate the George W. Bush administration between October 01 and November 08 as, quote, a government that has engaged in systematic or gross human rights violations, or a war crime, or a crime against humanity within the meaning of the subsections found in the Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act. So, alternatively, law hereby formally requests that the Attorney General of Canada give written consent to law to commence the prosecution of George W. Bush for torture. Unfortunately, it says request. Too bad law doesn't mean too much anymore, I guess. Well, let's learn a little bit about some of these laws. So, carrying on, we remind you that your government's often repeated statement that the most effective measure to ensure that Canada is not a safe haven for suspected perpetrators of war crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide, is their early detection and subsequent prevention of entry into Canada. So, let's look now at some experts' opinions to show that, yes, that torture has taken place by Bush and his administration. There are how many examples here? There's three. I'm going to read two. So in June 2008, the now retired Major General Antonio Toogoomba, well, before he retired, he was author of the U.S. Army's 2004 internal report on Abu Ghraib, which stated, quote, the commander-in-chief and those under him authorized a systematic regime of torture. After years of disclosures by government investigations, media accounts, and reports from human rights organizations, there is no longer any doubt as to whether the current Bush administration has committed war crimes. Now, that's coming from the Army's internal report. Okay, let's move on to a second one. In December 2008, the bipartisan U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee published a report based on an 18-month investigation, which put together 38,000 pages of documents and the testimony of over 70 people. This report concluded that, quote, senior officials, both Bush and others, in the United States government, they did three things. Firstly, solicited information on how to use aggressive techniques. Secondly, redefined the law to create the appearance of their legality. And thirdly, they authorized their use of torture against detainees. So, in February 09, that's right now, the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Manfred Nowick, concluded that there is now proof of torture authorized by Bush and others. Quote, we possess all the evidence which proves that the torture methods used in interrogation by the U.S. government were explicitly ordered by former U.S. Defense Minister Donald Rumsfeld. Obviously, these orders were given with the highest U.S. authorities' knowledge. Of course they were. So, in these circumstances, Canada must bar George W. Bush from entering Canada. Okay, due to time concerns, I'm going to skip on to the final piece of this letter addressed to the Canadian government. Again, Gail Davidson is the author with lawyersagainstthewar.org, if you want to check them out. It seems as if they had taken a couple years off, but they are back in business now that Bush is coming to town. They have put together this legal action. Unfortunately, they are requesting, they're asking, instead of demanding that, you know, that justice be served. But, okay, so no immunity for the prosecution for torture. So this will conclude this piece. In November 2004, when Bush entered Canada, Law filed a 7-count information alleging that, as President of the U.S. and Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, Bush has aided, abetted, and counseled torture at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay. A judge of the Provincial Criminal Division Court of B.C. dismissed the proceedings on the basis that, as a head of state, Bush had, quote, immunity from prosecution under the criminal laws of Canada. Well, guess what? He's not the leader anymore, so I guess law is hoping that that will change things. So to conclude, we look forward to receiving a timely response to our formal requests for action by the Prime Minister, Minister of Immigration, Attorney General of Canada, Minister of Public Safety, and by the Canadian Border Services Agency. Actions required by Canadians and by international law. So very nice. Let's not forget out there that the Bush administration is guilty of many things. Certainly their role in the 9/11 farce is the biggest. That's where everything started due to that. So let's look there, shall we? Okay, well, it is time now to let you know that you're listening to CHLY, for one. And secondly, the next piece coming up is myself in discussion with Jack Etkin. This comes from a public access television show based out of Victoria, B.C., called Face to Face with Jack Etkin. The producer and director is Steve Poole. Both of these gentlemen will be on my show March 11th. So, Jack was playing the interviewer there, and boy, I'm going to turn the tables on him this time. And a lot of topics in this following piece. It is about 50 minutes long. Becoming the Media is part of it. And also looking at the SPP, heroes, fascism. Oh, lots of stuff, including suggested reading, so says myself. So you can watch this video. Again, go. It's posted at Google Video because YouTube will stop your piece at 10 minutes, and you can get the whole piece at Google Video. So there you go. You can look up Face to Face with Jack Etkin, or you can visit my website where I will link to this. My website is at unbossed.livejournal.com. That's unbossed.livejournal.com. So there we are. I'm going to let Raymond and Jack take over for the next hour, almost an hour. So I don't know if I'm going to come back and say goodbye to you. I probably will. So we'll talk to you again before too long. And did I tell you you're listening to CHLY? Well, you are. Good place to be. Okay, friends, be well. And this is Face to Face with Jack Etkin and myself, recorded earlier this month.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Face to Face. Our guest today is Raymond Geisler. Raymond, am I saying that correctly?
Geisler is just fine. Thanks.
Raymond Geisler. Raymond is from Nanaimo. He's got a radio show called Unbought and Unbossed on Nanaimo Community Radio, which is
CHLY.
CHLY. And we're going to be talking about quite a few issues today, so welcome to the show. Raymond, you want to talk a bit about what you call becoming the media. So why don't you lead off with that?
Okay. I suppose that what we're doing right now is becoming the media. Likewise, my radio show is an extension of becoming the media. And the idea behind that is that, well, a lot of persons that are paying close attention to world events, now maybe I should say world events, not from the corporate television daily newspaper view, but well, primarily through publications of books and the internet. So in that sense, becoming the media is informing our family, our friends, our community members, the persons that we love and want to protect in our communities, to giving them perhaps a more accurate view of what's going on. Because a lot of people are coming to find that the mainstream media, they're not giving us the goods.
You want to give a couple of examples of that?
Well, certainly, from my personal background, 9/11, I think, might be the largest of these issues. The official story is not and cannot be true for a million reasons. It's a lie from start to finish. Those who have looked into it rather quickly find out that there are problems. If they choose to keep looking, they're going to find out there's lots of problems in the official story. So myself, this radio station, CHLY, they're at 101.7 FM. You can also listen live streaming on the internet. Let's post www.chly.ca. So the world can listen to that.
Let's just say that one more time.
www.chly.ca.
Listen in, folks. When is your show on?
Wednesdays from 8 to 10 p.m., and that's Pacific Standard Time.
So that's the time we're in?
Yes, okay. It is. Unfortunately, I've had quite a few guests. My last two telephone guests have both been very brave, strong women from Saskatoon, and that's 2 hours difference. But I've also had quite a few guests from Toronto and Montreal, and that's getting into the wee hours of the morning. That doesn't work out too well. Pacific Standard Time. Becoming the Media. I've been supporting this show, face-to-face with Jack Etkin, on my show, because I think it's a good example of becoming the media. Talking about pertinent issues, this show is quite nice because it covers quite a large variety of topics. Likewise, I like to think that my show does as well. It's been called Canada's only 9/11 Truth Radio Show, but it encompasses much more than just that topic.
What are some of the other issues you have guests on about?
Well, I suppose whistleblowers that have various information, their research has put them in a place that they themselves are proof that the official media is not accurate. And there's a lot of people out there that are willing to speak on those issues.
So a whistleblower on what issue?
I'll answer that in a round-the-corner way. When I first got my show, a little over 2 years ago, I attempted to get politicians and media personalities on my show, and I guess I was going to kind of confront them on the different issues and how they're being presented by their corporations and by their government. And I quickly learned that they don't want to take part in this type of becoming the media, and that was really unfortunate for me. There's a lot of people who are in a position that... this sounds like a pretty heavy line to draw, but it almost comes down to either their ignorance of the issues and of contemporary history today, or they're fully aware of the problems and they're choosing not to speak out. And we can call them a couple different names, maybe a traitor, maybe corrupt. It's pretty tough. Now you asked for examples of whistleblowers. I have one coming up later this month. We're in mid-February right now. So in the end of February, I'm going to have a gentleman who the Canadian government asked him to take part in a Kyoto conference that was sponsored by the government. And he is a naturalist, and he has an in-home company, I suppose. His family runs it, and they create medicinal ointments and treatments. And the Canadian government wanted to use him as a poster boy for how green and progressive Canada is. Well, he very quickly found out that Canada is not the green progressive, as they like to say, and that they were only using him as a media boy.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, that would be one example.
That's an important issue. I mean, that's the kind of thing that really we never hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Canada on the international stage has become a bit of a pariah. We're not the Canada that we think we were from 10 or 15 years ago on a lot of issues. We have been supporting the Bush White House from before when the Bush White House was there. On a lot of issues, and these are kept secret. We don't know what our government is doing internationally, but a lot of it is not very nice stuff. On trade issues, on health issues, on environmental issues, we are not the friend of the poor and dispossessed. We are the friend of the corporation. That's what Canada has become. And it's not the Canada that I want on the world stage. And we never hear about that kind of stuff in the media because the media does not want us waking up and saying, hey, you know, what's Canada doing? And interfering with the corporations and the corporate politicians as they carry out their job 365 days a year of basically destroying everything in their path.
I was born in the States, and I came to Canada as a 10-year-old boy. And at first, I didn't want to accept Canada because America is the greatest at everything, according to a 10-year-old boy. You know, mom, baseball, and apple pie, that was all that mattered. And you look out if you say something otherwise about America, the wonderful. So as the years progressed, I came to fall in love with the things that Canada was known for, that you spoke of, you know, the peacekeeping. You know, the country that would accept military deserters from the States and welcome them.
Yeah.
That their morals are Canadian morals, you know, and that, you know, gives you the warm fuzzy inside.
Yeah.
You know, that...
Exactly.
Yeah, son of a gun, you know, and that's what my show is about. And I think most persons that are part of this new truth movement, and when I say that, I don't want to only include the 9/11 movement, because from my understanding, and I'm fairly well versed in this truth movement, it encompasses many, many issues. Truth regardless of its color and background.
I got involved through environmental issues 20 years ago. And I remember coming to the horrible realization after a few years that it was totally corrupt from the top down. I was working on forestry issues. And, you know, you start off bright-eyed and bushy-tailed thinking, you know, this is so obvious that we're destroying everything. We're getting fewer jobs per tree cut down than virtually any constituency in the world. We're destroying the forests. We can do better. But it doesn't matter. You know, somebody told me when I started that you can pile the evidence on the table up to the ceiling. Nobody in government cares because their minds are made up. They are working for the logging companies on that particular issue. And basically, you know, they'll patronize you, but you aren't going to win because it's a fixed game. And it's a fixed game in just about everything. We aren't a democracy. We are basically a corporate-run society. And unless we can change that, then we'd better change it very quickly, because on both environmental issues and economic issues, things are becoming very, very, very grim, as I'm sure most of our viewers would agree to. Have you had any guests on about the economic situation that we're in?
Well, let me see. There's a Victoria activist, Guy Salzler. He's been on my show speaking on specifically on economic issues. He might be the only one on that topic. Now, that is you can study that in universities for many years and still not know everything. That's a very large pie to dig into.
One of the big issues on that one is, are we here by accident? In other words, the people who run the show just absolutely lost control, or are we here by design? And they have led us into this catastrophe. They are pocketing money by the hundreds of billions of dollars, because somebody is, and they are going to crash everything, which seems to be happening now, leave the rest of us in utter chaos, and basically walk away to their palaces. I mean, that could be the situation. When you look at what's happened over the last 10 years, it's basically the underlying problem seems to be the free trade deals, which have moved so much of our manufacturing jobs overseas to low-wage countries. And as wealth flowed out of North America, and especially out of the United States, they had to keep America going because America is the consumer of all of this junk that's made everywhere. So how do you do it? You create a housing bubble. I mean, they created a few other bubbles along the way, the dot-com bubble. But the housing bubble is the last one. And basically, America was broke, but they created a huge amount of paper money and paper wealth to keep the United States economy buying for another 5 or 6 years.
In
massive debt. And when that began to collapse, because people simply couldn't, there simply weren't any more house purchases, That's when they brought in the subprime mortgage people. They gave mortgages to people who in no way could afford them, but that kept it going for another couple of years. And now, basically, they've led us to the verge of absolute disaster. And I've heard in the States, the solution may be to start privatizing everything. In other words, all the public's assets are going to be sold off at rock-bottom prices, because the states are very near bankruptcy, in California to begin with, maybe.
And they're going to promise us prosperity through trickle-down, aren't they?
Yes.
I can't wait. Yeah, the way you introduced that, asking whether this was by accident or on purpose, and that reminds me of a saying that's becoming more and more popular, I'll concede to being a conspiracy theorist if you will likewise admit to being a coincidence theorist.
And, which means?
Well, that everything just kind of happens. You know, there's no one pulling the strings up.
Oh, things
just
happen.
This is just the way they happen, and darn it, we're doing our best to get them back on track, aren't we?
Yeah.
No. I firmly believe the more that I've been learning over these years, it seems to me that there's a structure of power above the national government. And, you know, to those that, you know, likewise have been learning about this, that doesn't sound like a surprise. But if you take this to your average telephone or television viewer, no. You know, they don't know about these various secret societies that literally the world's elite, these families that, perhaps the international bankers, you know, the money generated over the centuries, you know, is absolutely hideous. From the best I can understand, in numerous cases, these banking families have funded both sides of major combat, world wars.
Well, let's take a look at World War II. If anybody chooses to Google Bush and Hitler, I don't know if you've ever done that.
Of course, yeah.
If you Google Bush and Hitler, you will find that George Bush's grandfather, Senator Prescott Bush, Senator and banker Prescott Bush, was involved along with basically parts of the American corporate business economic elite in funding the Nazis and bringing Adolf Hitler to power in the early years when money is so important. Anybody who's been involved in a small group knows that without a little bit of money, nothing much happens. So, you know, like everybody else, Adolf Hitler needed money. And it was Western bankers and Western very wealthy families, and others as well, no doubt, who were funding him.
Mm-hmm. And, indeed, there was an attempted coup in 1934. I guess you could say a fascist coup, a corporatist coup. They were hoping to use a Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine at that time in American history, to lead this coup.
Now, you should go into that a little bit more, because this is something that I've never heard of until a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yet it is documented historical fact. It's on the record. And yet it disappears from our history. It's not in the school books. It's not in the media.
And it's so important.
And basically what it was an attempt by the richest U.S. families to overthrow Franklin Delano Roosevelt and basically institute a military government under the leadership of Smedley Butler, who, as you say, was the most decorated Marine or soldier.
Marine, I believe, yeah.
In the United States at that time. And what happened?
Well, he wrote a book, and
but he didn't.
He did not. He was a truth teller himself, and he came clean. I'm not remembering the title of his publication. Oh, it's a fantastic title as well. Regardless, he told the truth.
Testified to Congress.
What was going to happen? Indeed, and Congress did find that this plan existed.
Yes. Nothing was ever done for
it was swept under
because they are the power.
Amazing.
If anybody wants to Google Smedley Butler, I'm sure you'll find the story very quickly.
He has some famous quotes.
Yeah.
Talking about, I had been a soldier for American corporations in Central and South America, you know, and he names all these countries that, you know, the Marines had gone in and staged coups.
And he did it as a young man who was a believer that everything he was doing was right and just, and yet, of course, just as it is today, it's all a pack of lies. It's all phony.
There's a lot of similar brave people out there today that are doing very similar things. I can think of Michael Rupert, the decorated police officer out of L.A.,
who stumbled across a narcotics issue in which he actually found out that the CIA was importing drugs.
That's right.
You know, and he's still very active in his truth-telling research.
Yes.
You know, it goes on, and that's fantastic. There are a lot of very inspiring people, and there are heroes out today that you and I know of some of them, and let's hope that more and more learn.
It's unfortunate that the media, which is sort of part of the subject of our discussion tonight, it's too bad that the media itself never really covers these people. And of course that's deliberate too, just as everything else is deliberate. They don't want the public to know that there are these great, courageous, heroic men and women out there doing very good things, because the enemy for most of these people is the corporation. And since the corporation owns the media is not going to cover these people. Instead we get sports and entertainment and Madonna and whoever they want to give us. But the real heroes, people like, for example, Percy Schmeiser, I'll mention that name.
I don't know that name.
He is very prominent in the movement to stop the genetic contamination of our food supply. He's a Canadian hero. He's been around the world. He's won awards worldwide. And of course, like most Canadians, you don't know that name. Never heard of him. Terry Fox. I mean, there is a real hero. And, you know, there's somebody, because it was something that was non-political, you know, he was allowed to be the hero that...
I'm thinking of one other hero. He's been on my show a couple times, and he also fits the description of a whistleblower, which you asked about earlier. His name is Kevin Annett, and he's a former minister who's turned whistleblower in uncovering the genocidal attempts by the Canadian government and the churches that were hired to make the First Nation problem go away or become as small as possible. And that was done through numerous ways. That's someone I would love to see on your show.
You know what? I heard of him, and I remember that name, and yes, the story he told was quite remarkable.
Indeed. They went after, they attacked him, his person, physically, but more importantly, of course, he lost his job. Defrocked, I think maybe is the term he's used in the past. But he somehow found this inner strength. Maybe he's acting on, I'm not a Christian. I know a little bit about the Bible. Personally myself, I don't think that there was a Jesus Christ, but that's not really here nor there. But I find Kevin Annett is doing a pretty good job in practicing the teachings of this Jesus character. And that's a brave person to stand.
Oh, hey, friends. I'm going to butt in there. I'm just going to let you know that you are listening to CHLY 101.7, the Unbought and Unbossed show. What you're listening to is an interview between Jack Etkin of Face to Face, a public access TV show out of Victoria, and myself, your host, Raymond. So that's what you're listening to. So I'll send you back to that.
Yeah, and say... You know, I've got my morals, and luckily this man has courage as well. And
of course, what was done to the natives was not done in secret. You can be very sure that everybody who was in the know knew about it and had signed on to it. And that means the business structure as well. It wasn't just the government and the media, because they kept it secret while it was happening. And only discovered it, you know, in quotation marks, many years when it was convenient, because the Catholic Church was getting a little uppity and had to be brought down in the United Church and all the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed. There's some other... Can I carry on, or did you want to change?
Well, you said earlier we should talk about the form of government that we're moving into, which I think you mentioned Naomi Klein called it a corporatist form of government.
Yeah, she's afraid of the word fascism.
Yeah, and other people call it a fascist form of government. Maybe you just want to go there.
Okay. Well, Mussolini... In the early, maybe it was even the late 20s, stated the quote that basically fascism is corporatism, and it's the merger of the state and the money, and they're going to work together for their goals. And when you make all the rules and the other side has all the money and owns all the business and industry, you know, and access the resources and so on, what's left?
Just the people.
Just the workers. And very quickly, one of the things that happens in a fascist dictatorship, basically, you know, a militaristic dictatorship, mind you. Labor rights are suppressed. Unions are
quite often eliminated. Corporations seem to be, well, don't seem to be, they are, they do become above the law. There's this tremendous attempt at patriotic fervor, which we see in Canada right now. You know, they're putting soldiers on our coins and on our dollars to give the impression that we respect what they're doing on the world stage and that they're making Canada better and stronger, and that's not the case. You know, it's just, we need some more cannon fodder for the American Empire. And that's, you know, Canada is a part of the American Empire, as simple as that. I believe that we take our orders, not so much from the White House, but the Pentagon. I think that the Pentagon is the senior level of government over the White House. And I think that that's certainly debatable.
Or you could say that a senior to both of them is Wall Street, and not only Wall Street, but that cabal of families who owns Wall Street and owns the major corporations and owns everything, and probably got out of this economic mess a couple of years ago because they knew it was coming, and are now standing aside with massive amounts of wealth in their pockets and gold, I guess, and just watching their wealth go up while the world is being brought to the edge of anarchy, which is not going to be pleasant. There have been riots in Eastern Europe already. I don't know if you've heard about that. We heard a little bit here about what happened in Greece, because it was so big it couldn't be kept hidden, but they pretended in the media that it was just because of the killing of a teenager by the police, but it wasn't. What happened in Greece was triggered by that, but what it was really all about is the economic mess that the government of Iceland has fallen. There was a one-day strike in France, and the U.S. individual states, many of them are nearing bankruptcy, and they don't seem to be part of this bailout. You know, they're not getting any money. The money's all going, I don't know where, I don't know if anybody knows where, but it's in the trillions of dollars now that the Americans have given up. And this is money that the U.S. government is borrowing that the people of the United States are going to have to pay back. They're going to be so far in debt when they wake up. And the people are awake. They don't want these bailouts.
And they are.
Nobody listens.
Yeah. Hey, isn't that frustrating? And, you know, this new messiah president.
Yeah.
Obama. So many people, and I know progressive thinkers that are saying, give him a chance, Ray. You know, don't be so tough on him.
Yeah.
And what we're learning is to look at who he's chosen in his cabinet. And these people, many of them are members, again, of these elite secret societies. These, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations. Those are things you want to look up. Those are things that you're not going to hear much on.
I'll have to admit, I'm still hoping, you know, in terms of Obama, but I'm very nervous, and we'll see what he does.
Well, apparently, his economic stimulus plan is moving right along. I believe the recent one is $835 billion. And that's a lot. That's hard to fathom.
So how about here in Canada? What kind of government do we have here? Are we a democracy? And if so, what would you give us on a scale of 1 to 10 in the democratic form?
I'll ask this question. When was the last time that a major issue was brought to the people to vote on, whether in a plebiscite, a referendum of some kind?
The last time I remember was 4 years ago, on the date of the last provincial election. We voted on the referendum of whether or not to change our voting system to something called a proportional system called single transferable vote.
Okay.
And it passed by a vote of 57% to 43%, but somehow that wasn't good enough and we didn't get it.
I think that they changed, the number was originally 50%. 50 plus 1.
50 plus 1 always wins a referendum.
Well, they decided that, I don't know if they moved it up to 60.
Moved it up to 60, Mr. Campbell, the great Democrat, our leader.
Isn't that something?
In the same election, he got 46% of the vote, I believe, his party, maybe a little bit less.
That sounds 57%
right. Of the people of British Columbia voted, of the voters at least, voted to change our voting system to something more democratic, that I believe is more democratic, and the government refused. The opposition didn't want any part of it because they don't want it either, the NDP. And the media was silent because they represent the corporations who also don't want it, because who wants democracy? The people who run the country, they've got it all right now. They have total control. So why would they want to share it with the rest of us?
They don't want these views getting out there. You know, if someone was elected from, you know, the Green Party or the BC Refederation Party, which is a brand new party, well, they're not brand new, but they're doing their best to make waves in provincial politics. Well, yeah.
There you go.
Actually, another thing that's along similar lines, you were talking about the percentage of persons that voted for our current leader in BC. We can also look at the last federal election.
Yes.
And most Canadians know that there was an attempt to create a coalition.
Right.
To say that 63% of the voters are opposed to what the Conservative government is doing. That seems to have fizzled away. Ignatieff, the new Liberal...
Yeah, they got rid of Dion. The media ridiculed. I mean, the media I listen to on radio especially just ridiculed the idea of a coalition, even though that is perhaps the most fundamental part of our democracy, the Parliament is the ruler, not the government, not the Prime Minister, the Parliament. And we'd be much better off if Parliament did rule.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, somehow it all fizzled out, and Dion was taken out.
Mm-hmm. Any time that the media...
At least in Canada, they just take them out politically, not like in the United States.
Yeah, they're not assassinated as often. When the media attacks a certain political leader or an idea, maybe they want to label them conspiracy theorist, and it seems that there's a big gang up, as they did on Dion, and another person in the States we can maybe look at, Ron Paul, for example.
Dennis Kucinich. And most people will say, who is Dennis Kucinich? Yeah. And that's exactly the point. Dennis Kucinich brings a lot to the table. He was running against Mr. Obama and against Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination, and his name was basically never mentioned because the kind of thing that he was saying, the power structure, did not want mentioned, so they just keep it secret. They just don't report it.
So my point is that when you're teaching yourself history, which is how you have to do it today, you have to teach yourself. Don't believe me. Don't believe Jack. You got to do a lot of research, and you got to take bits and pieces from here and there. And that's one thing I push on my show. I'm no smarter than you. I'm giving you some ideas that I think might lead you in a direction, and I'm learning as I go each week on the show. Come with me and let's learn history together, I sometimes say, and that's true. You know, and I'm trying to remain humble as well, and I hope that I do so. I don't want to be a know-it-all, because I'm not, and I don't ever want to pretend to be one. So my point was, when the media jumps on someone, take a look there. Anytime they use that word conspiracy theory, take a look deeper into that, because you're getting close. You're getting warmer. When they start saying conspiracy theory, dig there. It's getting warm. So that's part of learning to be how to read the media, you know.
So let's move on to something that is also, I think, of tremendous importance, and that also many Canadians have only the slightest glimmering about, because, again, it doesn't get much of a mention. And that's an agreement that has two names. The official name is the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP for short, Security and Prosperity Partnership. Some people also call it the North American Union.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a merging of Canada, the United States, and Mexico within one border, one set of regulations, no trade barriers between the three countries, full freedom of movement for labor as much as the elite wants the labor to move, and of course the ability of money to flow freely, the lowest possible set of standards, I think, is what they're looking for, etc. Now, we hear nothing about it from the media, and I don't even know if it's still moving ahead or not. It is an agreement that was signed in, I believe, 2005.
Paul Martin.
As Prime Minister of Canada, George Bush as the President of the United States, and Vicente Fox as the President of Mexico.
And it's moved on. There's, in all three countries, there's new governments. And as far as I know, everything is full steam ahead.
The last meeting, they meet annually. The public is kept completely outside.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group of, I believe, 30 corporate advisors, 10 from each country, who meet with the leaders, and that's leaders with a capital L. In the official documentation, they've been given a capital L. The last meeting was in Montebello, Quebec. Nobody really knows what happened at that meeting. When was it?
It was about jelly beans. Don't you know that, John?
That's right. Mr. Harper said it was about jelly beans.
Yeah, that's all you need to know. Go back to sleep.
So one thing that did happen was that somebody from Nanaimo, which is where you're from, filmed a very interesting scene, and maybe you just want to tell us about that.
Sure. The videographer's name is Paul Manley. Manley Media is his production company. He's been a guest on my show a couple times, and he's with the Council of Canadians as well, which I believe is Canada's largest citizen-based activist group. Maud Barlow is still their leader. Her specialty is at water issues right now. I'm sure you know about her through your environmental readings. So Paul Manley went to Montebello to film. The Council of Canadians had the agreement with the government that they would accept a huge amount of signatures as a protest. And the government said, yes, we will accept these at the gate. Well, they changed their mind on that. And as they do when there's national or international summits, they create perimeters, little safe areas. And what almost always happens is the police change the rules. Well, we're now moving it back to 2 blocks. And that quite often will heat things up a little bit with the protesters saying, we know we can legally be here, but if you have someone dressed in all black and lots of equipment to hurt you with, that's going to get scary. I haven't been in that situation myself, and I don't want to be there on the front line of an international protest like that. So what happened in this instance is disgusting. leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and Canada should be ashamed that they would do this tactic. Three that we know of. Could have been many more. Three Quebec police officers.
And we don't even know they were Quebec police. They could have been military, and they could have been American.
Well, the Quebec police did admit.
Yes, but everything else they said was a pack of lies, so why should we believe that one?
Good point, good point.
But we do know they were military, police, or something like that.
Yeah, law enforcement, one form or another.
Law enforcement. Application.
Well, they were dressed as, I guess, anarchist protesters, hiding themselves with rocks in their hands.
At least one rock.
Right? Yes. Yeah. There were also rocks thrown that Paul witnessed coming from behind, going over the police line. Perhaps they were indeed throwing rocks.
So these three guys basically went up to a group of protesters, and there was a union leader there who said, we don't want you here because this is a peaceful protest.
Right, yeah. But this is peaceful. You go somewhere else. I don't care where you go. Just leave us alone. Don't get us into trouble.
And after a few more seconds, he realized that these guys were police, he thought.
Yeah.
And he started to call them out as police. And instead of leaving, what they did was they walked over to the police lines. The line opened, and they went through and were then arrested. Because it had all been caught on film by Paul Manley, if it hadn't been caught on film, the whole thing would have disappeared.
That's right.
It's disappeared anyways.
The CBC covered it. Good for them.
Yes.
Good for them. They didn't do, they never do their job as fully as I wish they would on matters as important as this.
Anyways, after the Quebec Provincial Police denied everything for as long as they could, it became obvious that these three people were either police or military, and they admitted that they were police. Nobody's head rolled for the lies that the provincial police told us. There's never been an investigation. The issue has been completely lost by the media. And yet what it was on film, a group of, let's say they were Quebec Provincial Police. Acting as agent provocateurs to create the incident needed by the police who were right there wearing the riot gear to attack the protesters. And
the peaceful protesters.
The peaceful protesters. And then the media would have shown that on television, and away we go. The same as we see every time there is that kind of protest. The media almost never goes into the real issues about why people are there in the hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. They don't discuss that. What they show is people, in some cases we now know of provocateurs, throwing rocks at buildings and breaking windows. And we should be asking why the media never asks these real questions.
Mm-hmm.
What's really going on?
Yeah.
So the SPP moves ahead, or doesn't, I don't know what's happening.
Well, Hard to say. For example, one of the 10 corporations that are on the Canadian side is Canwest Media. They own the two Vancouver papers, the Victoria paper, the Nanaimo paper, dozens of papers. You know, in BC, except for the Globe and Mail, they own all the other newspapers in this region. You cannot have a democracy when you have primarily one voice. That's not possible. That right there should be a flag that goes off. The other flag would be when the Minister of National Safety, or I'm not too sure of his term, Stockwell Day, that creep, got up shortly after and said, well, we don't really see that the Quebec police did anything against the law. You know, they didn't catch him throwing rocks.
Say that?
Stockwell Day said this, and he said, if you want to take up a complaint, take it to the Quebec police. We don't see any damage done.
Now, I heard Paul Manley say exactly what you just said, and the point is that the politicians, the corporate politicians, are allowed to do that. The media doesn't question. There's no, I mean, Stockwell Day's career could have been ended over that.
And it should have.
And it should have. Because clearly this is an incident beyond seriousness. And yet he, as the federal minister in charge, does nothing. And the whole thing is swept under the rug. This was a vicious attack on our democracy. Nothing.
Well, let's carry on
where we are.
Where this is at right now is Paul Manley continued to work on this area with the Security and Prosperity Partnership and STOMA, which is something rather similar. It's an agreement so far between BC and Alberta with hopes of the other provinces joining in. And
very important part of the SPP, probably.
Yeah. It's almost like the SPP on the provincial level as opposed to the national level. So he's just released the world premiere of the film that he spent the last year putting together, and he's calling it You, Me, and the SPP, Trading Democracy for Corporate Rule. That's the full title.
You, Me, and the SPP, Trading Democracy for Corporate Rule.
Yes.
That's what it's all about.
So he got a number of well-informed Canadians of various degrees to speak on behalf of this this corporatist, this fascist takeover of our democracy.
And once again, just to remind people of what you said, Mussolini's definition of fascism is a merging of state and corporate power. And I think that's where we're moving and have been moving for a long time. It's getting closer. And what's happening economically now may be the next step in that, as governments are perhaps bankrupted along with,
if the government were to be bankrupted, that wouldn't hurt the power elite.
No, they don't.
At all. For example, there's evidence to back this up that there have been numerous economic stock market collapses in which the value of the stocks dwindled to near nothing. The persons, the regular blue-collar workers that had invested, they lose their shirts. However, what happens...
Oh, hey, friends. It's Raymond here. I'm just letting you know that you're listening to a conversation between myself and Jack Etkin from Face to Face. It's a TV show, public access TV show out of Victoria. You can watch the video of this if you want to see my funny mug on the Internet. That is, so you can look up Face to Face with Jack Etkin. It's at Google Video. So there you go. This is going to be the last time I talk to you folks tonight, so I hope everyone's well. The snow is really coming down here in downtown Nanaimo, so if you don't have to go out, don't go out, I guess is what I'm telling you. So wish me luck getting home, and be well. We'll see you next week. This is CHLY. You know that. Take care.
These elitists come in, and they buy up all those corporations at pennies on the dollar. And 50 years later, those corporations are now back running the world again, you know, and on and on. And there's a lot of people that suggest that this global economic collapse has been structured. It didn't happen by accident. Is it a conspiracy? Did these people knowingly work together to do that? That's what a conspiracy is.
Yeah, just a couple of people working together to do something.
To do something wrong, questionable, something wrong. Certainly. That is a conspiracy.
Well, do you think the oil companies conspire against us and the banks?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Why would you not think they do that?
So there we are, the SPP. Not too many people know about it. Not too many people know about this TOMA.
But you can find out about it.
You can.
Just Google Security and Prosperity Partnership. Or what else? How else can people...
You can visit my website.
Okay. What's the website?
What I do, I have a two-hour weekly show. I edit the show, take out the ums and the ahs, the commercials, and so on, put it back together online, and I publish it weekly. The website is www.unbossed.livejournal.com.
So www.unbossed.livejournal.com.
Yeah.
You can also just Google Council of Canadians. I think they've got a lot about the Security and Prosperity Partnership.
They have plenty. That's right. Yes.
And it's basically an agreement, a secret agreement. Secret in the sense that it's never mentioned and most Canadians don't know anything about it. It seems to be moving ahead, although who knows? I mean, it's impossible to get information. Is there another summit planned for...
That's not something that I'm following very closely, but I'm sure that there will be one yearly. Now, let's go back to the beginning of how the SPP came about. We need to go back to 9/11, at which time America said, we're not safe. We need to protect our boundaries. We need to make a North American boundary. We can't have people coming in through Canada, like the Americans said that happened to over 9/11, and that was a lie as well.
That was a lie as well, but
we can't have them coming in from Mexico, even though they do like 100
every day.
So that's a big, silly excuse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's how the Security and Prosperity Partnership, or that's the logic that they're going to try to sell.
In other words, they want to put a border around all three countries, a tight security perimeter.
And harmonize.
And within that perimeter, everything can sort of move freely.
So they say.
So they say.
So they say. You know, what's really going to happen in 5-10 years from now, I'm not too sure. I don't have any kids, and I'm kind of glad about that. I want to be an optimist. And, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of people that share my feelings.
Yeah. And we should end on that note. Because there are a lot of great people, a lot of honest people, a lot of people trying to do good things, fighting for what's right and just and fair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have some small victories. We're up against the very powerful opponents, but we continue on.
I don't want to give up. You know, I don't think I could live with myself if I let this evil, these crimes against the human race
and
continue.
And the planet.
Yes. You know, so I'm one of many. Jack is one. Steve is one. There's a lot of people that I really respect that I've met due to my political activism. And I want to continue, you know. And if you get a chance to tune into my show, that would be wonderful. And like I said, learn history with me. If you, if there's a story you want to hear, give me an email. We'll have it posted here on the show for you. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to step in and to continue my role as attempting to become the media.
Raymond, I see you brought some books along. Maybe you'd like to say a few things about some of those books.
Thank you, I would. I've got a point to make here. Let me tell you, I went to university to study literature, and I love the written word. I love to read. And what I learned is that all these pieces of literature are talking about history that I don't know the backstory to. So my interest shifted to teaching myself history. You know, so I can place these pieces of literature into context. So what I've done is I've brought some books that are primarily political, and a number of these I've read from on my radio show. The books that you see here, I do recommend them all. However, there's two camps. The first camp is by so-called progressive left writers. They're often pundits on TV. However, their critique on contemporary history basically stops at the official story, and that's very troubling. And their research is fantastic, and what they do present, for the most part, is bang on, and I do recommend these books. However, they don't go all the way. So I'm going to give you a couple titles of this first group that are quality, but I don't think they give you the full goods. For example, Canadian Naomi Klein, The Shock Doctrine, looks at American imperialism, what they've done with the Washington Consensus, which basically means Washington will support the corporate profits throughout the world, in particular coups and so on and so forth in the Americas. Noam Chomsky, he's taken a lot of criticism on his stance on 9/11. He seems that, well, conspiracies just don't happen. Well, Noam, they do, and while you do great work, that's George Monbiot, another one, an English author. Good stuff, but again, he doesn't quite take it all the way. Michael Parenti, I've got a lot of respect for this fellow. For example, if you want to learn about academics that their careers get into a little bit of trouble because they're being a little too honest in their interpretations of American foreign policy, for example, Michael Parenti is someone that I suggest you read. Another one, Howard Zinn. This is a very famous book. I believe it's the best-selling history textbook in America, The People's History of the United States. A fantastic read. However, it seems as if the research that they do proves that the world does run by conspiracy, but conspiracies don't happen. Ooh, how is that possible? How can you prove that they exist, but yet you say that they don't? Gwen Dyer, another pundit for the CBC. When you see someone talking on CBC or American news channels, be wary of these authors. They do good work, but not the full goods. Let's move into the second set of authors. Alex Jones, a very popular radio personality. He's kind of Mr. 9/11, huge following. Another one that I strongly recommend is Naomi Wolf. She talks about the American shift into a fascist form of government. I strongly recommend this book. Likewise, let's move into, this is the first 9/11 truth book that I read that was published in 2004. Prior to the official story, the commission hadn't even come out. So this is his first book. This is maybe his sixth or seventh, and it's 9/11, or I'm sorry, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. So 4 years later, this is more than likely the most complete story of the 9/11 evidence on both sides. He's comparing them both. Likewise, let's move into a Canadian, Barry Zwicker. He's going to be speaking in Edmonton next month at Edmonton Questions 9/11. This Barry Zwicker is responsible for turning me on to 9/11 truth ideas. I watched his first video, and I thought, wow, there's more problems in the story than I thought. This is an important book. It's put out yearly, censored 2009. It covers the 25 most important censored stories. Do yourself a favor. Pick this book up each year. This one here, talking about conspiracies, Daniel Estulin. He's a, I don't know if he's a Canadian citizen. He's not Canadian-born. However, he looks at the secret societies, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and the Council on Foreign Relations. That's three of maybe a half dozen of these elite secret societies that many people suggest when that these are the people who choose the president. It's not the voters. You get a choice between frick and frack. These people are the ones who put frick and frack in that place. Moving into literature, George Orwell, 1984, a masterpiece. It is more true now than ever. Do yourself a favor, read it. If you want to know where we're going, so says a lot of people, read this book. Likewise, one more, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. It's looking at a very frightening future, which includes science and technology. This author was in the know. He wrote about what he knew the elites were up to, what their ideas were, what their long-term plans were. Look into this. I believe 30 years after he wrote this, he came back and said, guys, this is happening way quicker than I thought it would happen. It's happening just a lot quicker. One more, this one, which fell. Jim Mars, an amazing author. The Rise of the Fourth Reich. This is a retelling of World War II. This is, as a matter of fact, the first World War II history I've read myself. And in this case, he follows the money. which I think if you're going to teach yourself history, that's a real important aspect, angle to follow. And that's what he does. And what we're finding is a lot of the industrial leaders worldwide, states included, financially backed Hitler's regime, and in some cases all the way through. But certainly the bankers, and you know what's interesting, we were talking about a little bit about this economic collapse, a lot of these bailouts. Guess what? The guy's getting some of these bailouts right now for the same jerks that funded Hitler. I mean, it drives you crazy. Anyway, so those are some books that I recommend that you read. And if you want to think that we're not living in a comic book version of reality, this is the official report on 9/11, but guess what? It's comic book style. So those of you who are getting dumbed down enough that you can't read a full book, you'll be able to read this one, right? There we go.
Thank you, Raymond, and thanks for tuning in, folks. My name is Jack Etkin. You've been watching Face to Face. We've been talking with Raymond Geisler of Nanaimo, and I think we covered a lot of issues. You may or may not agree, but some interesting points of view certainly come across. Thanks again for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.